Session number 1486, Edmund Murray.
So you formed up on the other side of the border in China.
Yeah.
And were you greeted by anybody or did it?
Yes, after a very short while, while we were, no, I'll tell you what, they were formed up and then I was called along and I can't remember who told me. As a matter of fact, it must have been either Couron. Because de Cogbon, the battalion commander, had been wounded, and he went to Calcutta. And I don't know, he didn't come through my hands in China at all, so I don't know how he got to Kunming and Calcutta. But so I suppose Couron had taken over the command of the battalion. So it was very, very probably Couron who called me. And he said, you, with your English, Murray, you should be able to, you know, devise some means of talking to anybody that wishes to meet. Now, I feel quite sure, he said, that we will be meeting up with somebody, or who somebody will be coming to meet us. And so, with a group, there were only four of us and myself, and Argo was there and two others, and we were carrying our rifles, and we marched off. And after about 5 or 6 miles, there were two horsemen coming towards me, towards us. I remember going through a village and this sort of thing, and they just didn't want to know, and we didn't want to know. Mm. I'd just been told to march until somebody met us, until I found somebody in authority, that's it. And remember, I'd been giving English lessons to Chinese merchants in Tong, and so I had quite a lot of Chinese phrases, Mandarin. And so I suppose Couron, you know, knew this, was aware of this. And so off I went, and after about 5 miles, these two horsemen coming towards me, and one was a major, Major Wu, and the other one was his batman. And so I addressed Major Wu first in Chinese.
In Chinese.
And then, in French first of all, you see. Because I thought, as he was certainly coming towards us, that he might be a French speaker. And so I spoke to him in French, and he didn't understand at all. And I tried my Chinese, and then suddenly he said something in English, and we were then on the same wavelength, if you like. And he was learning English, and he was very, very happy indeed to be able to speak English. And this was the key to the rest of my stay, particularly in China.
Everybody had on the right foot.
Yeah, right, indeed. And so he told me what had been organised.
Can I just ask you, which is the most obvious question, is how many people out of the 2,000 actually made it?
I suppose about 1,200.
1,200,
And what's more, some of them had branched off, do you see, and hadn't come through the same path as we had.
And okay, so how many of you, had you all come over at the same time, and were you all together? Two questions.
Well, I was only...
Of all that lot?
The only lot that I had any knowledge of at all, you see, were was the 2nd Battalion lot. And I suppose they were, as I said, somewhere about... We started off... How many did we lose? Somewhere I've got the details. I think I'll have to look it up. But I'm sure that we lost about 100 in the battalion.
Out of 600.
Out of 600 or so.
Right.
And so, you know, I suppose there were about 500. Yeah. And, but they were, I left them behind and they started marching and I went on ahead with my other four.
You'd gone, your battalion remained more or less together.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Very much, yes.
Right. And so they were marching and you're in front. Okay, yes. And from what you subsequently knew, what had happened to the other battalions?
Subsequently, yes, eventually. And they came over at different points, the first and the third.
Right.
And then there was a detachment of civilian military that came up right across on the towards the east.
So those would be dependents or something or other, or civilian clerks, or I don't know.
No, no.
You said civilian military.
The military, in that there were people that had started off not from Tong, but from a different place, okay. You see. And they'd made their own way, shall we say, into China. And were so that, to my knowledge, there were four different groups of soldiers and military personnel going into China four different ways.
And they wound up the other side of the border more or less at the same
Same
place at the same time, yes.
Mm-hmm. There were three of them, more or less at the same place at the same time. And another one much further afield. Mm. But they were eventually to get together at one place for the eventual, couple of years later, re-entry into Indochina.
Okay.
By which time, of course, I was no longer with them.
And they were, and that was within a few miles of each other, was it?
Not this fourth detachment.
Not the fourth, but the three.
The three of them were more or less, I suppose, within 50 miles of each other. 25 miles.
25? Oh, I see. Quite a wide distance. Yes. All right. Okay, so you bumped into...
Well, they went next door. Yeah. No. I'm sure it was 25 miles.
So this was Major Wu, was it?
Major Wu, yes.
Yes, so...
Now then, they were on horseback. And then Major Wu said that his general, who was in command of the area, of the district, you see, he wanted to see somebody responsible. Mm. And so it was me that was going to see him. We didn't wait for the troop to come up. And so we went off and we came to a village. And Wu said that this was the village where the battalion was going to stop for the night. But he said we weren't going into the village at all. We were going to stay in tents outside. Were there tents? I can't remember how they stayed. Were they? No. I feel sure that they were. They had requisitioned bamboo huts, if you like. But on the outskirts of this reasonably sized village, and that was where the battalion stayed for the night. But for me, particularly for me, and solely for me, not for my, for the other three, he had a special little cabin, if you like, grass cabin, organized for me to sleep. And he did this, you know, when we were there. Oh, because just before the village, yes, I'll get back to the story. When we first met, we started talking English. And then he told his batman to get off and walk. And he invited me to get onto this horse, do you see? And I said, no, my men are walking. I shall walk too. And so he got off his horse and he walked as well. But then from a short distance, maybe a mile, half mile or so, from the village where we were going to spend the night, he and his batman got on their horses and off they went to arrange the encampment, you see. And by the time the battalion got there, then there were quarters arranged, if you like, and a food supply, rice, which we had to cook ourselves. But there was rice and there was chicken and or meat of some description. Quite a reasonable thing, do you see.
What about cooking utensils? I mean, I'm just wondering, when you're feeding all the... I mean, had you brought great through the jungle?
That was one of the most important things to carry, wasn't it?
Well,
cooking utensils.
Well, and it depends on the size.
Oh, well, yes, I suppose, like a wok.
Ah, okay. Not
you know, a wok of about 4 inches deep.
Yes.
And we had usually two or three of them, and then a tureen, you know, deep, about a foot deep, and... 9 inches to a foot across.
Okay.
And these were always carried on mules, for instance.
I was thinking about stuff like that. You see these cooking utensils as big as a coffee table through the jungle.
No.
It might be a bit of an
encumbrance.
We're
on war footing, do you see?
Right.
And so, now I must tell you that one of the main things that Wu and I talked about was, did we have facilities to pay?
He wanted to know.
He wanted to know. Yes, and he wanted this sorted out. And I said, yes, I know that the treasurer has gold because I had permission, do you see, authority to explain that we were in the position to pay for any food and trouble that we were causing. Couran had told me this. And so that was one of the things that I spoke
to.
What
about the medical condition and all the rest of it?
Oh, nobody worried about that. Really? I mean, there was no change in that.
No.
There was no offer of, not that I can remember, of any hospital treatment or infirmary treatment or anything.
And how far were you away from the nearest big town?
I don't know. Yeah, the maps of that part of China, do you see, are very, very few and far between. And you can get them in atlases, like. And I've tried to run through and find out the villages and that sort of thing for the purposes of my book, do you see. But I found it very, very difficult indeed. I suppose that if I go to France, or if I go to the Kew Gardens down yonder, I'd be able to find out. Or maybe if I go to the Imperial War Museum, I might eventually find out. But I don't think I'm... It's not the sort of thing that people really want to know, the names of villages, if you don't know them. And the nearest place would be, because we're in Yunnan, and so I suppose the nearest centre would be the one I got to, Kunming, and then a bit further up on the right-hand side towards the northeast, there was Nanning, which is a different name, Nanching, or something like this today. But there we are, approaching, and we...
And you're along, presumably, hundreds of miles from a city.
Oh, yes, no doubt about that.
Yes.
But there are, of course, the provincial towns, small and large, I suppose. But we definitely were being kept away from the vicinity of any large towns, of any agglomerations.
So you're all billeted there, and you've been given a special hut.
And I've been given a special hut, and Wu didn't sleep there, not to my knowledge. I was there on my own, and he had procured for me a round thing like that, about 3 to 4 inches across, and about half an inch deep, a brown sugar, a raw sugar stuff, very, very sweet indeed, which of course was very, very palatable, and of course I shared it with the blokes that were with me, but on each occasion that we stopped for the night, there was always one of these wheels of sugar. He was really looking after me, and tidbits of bamboo shoots and things like this that the others didn't have, and which I didn't feel like sharing, as a matter of fact. So he was very, very understanding and very, very helpful, and eventually after two or three nights.
You carried on a route march.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was a route march, yes. We were going towards a reasonable town, a reasonably sized town, where the general was in quarters.
I'm surprised that your general didn't just stop the blokes up for a few days to rest.
No. We were coming on. All the time.
What about the foot condition?
I mean, let's face it, I wasn't carrying the money. The gold, I wasn't carrying the gold. You see, it was the bulk of the battalion that was carrying the gold. And so, naturally, you wanted the gold to get nearer and nearer and nearer, I suppose.
Ah, okay.
Do you see what I mean?
What was happening to the feet condition? Were you able to...
I can't remember any treatment
taking place.
But of course, they had been resting for a few hours, and there was no Japanese presence since Malitao. So the nearest Japanese presence, as far as we were concerned, was 10 miles behind us.
The other side of the border.
So there is time for the nursing auxiliaries, if you like, to go
round to people
and do a certain amount of treatment.
So you marched on. And then after a few days?
And then General Wu took me to the general's, Major Wu took me on, you see, to the general's quarters, took me in. He spoke, no French, no English, just Chinese. And so Wu was the interpreter. And the general said, of course, now then, he was going to have all our arms piled there. All the arms of the battalion were going to be piled. And I found out later on, of course, that all the arms and ammunition that the other detachments had carried into China with them, they were all taken off them. And I said to Wu, now then, You see, I would like you to tell the general that we would like to keep our arms because we are going back into Indochina and we're going to fight the Japanese, which is the common cause, you see. And so we argued and argued, and so he decided that we could keep our arms. And the 2nd Battalion kept their arms and ammunition for a future fight against the Japanese. And it was absolutely and entirely thanks to me and General Wu.
Okay, and Major Wu.
I'm sure that nobody will ever recognize the fact, but the point is that it's down in black and white, and whether they believe it or not, it's there. But there's no doubt about it, you know, that it was thanks to me that that happened. And the general was, you know, accommodating up to a certain point, but he wanted paying.
So you met up with this general. So it was you and who else on the French side?
No, just me.
Just you?
Just me and Major Wu.
And this is Chinese nationalist general.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then, so you were billeted near this town, were you? Or where were the troops billeted?
Yeah, near, but certainly on the outside. Mm. I mean, we weren't allowed to go through the middle of the town. We had to stay outside. And then, of course, I reported to Kurong when he came up and told him that the general wanted paying.
Mm.
And so he got Korst, who was the treasurer and was in charge of all, but he was Jewish, was Korst. And I'm quite sure that in the case that he was carrying...
He was the treasurer.
He had the money.
Mm.
And he'd been paying it out, you see, not to the troops. We hadn't been paid, you know,
for
a long time. And so Kurong and Korst went into the general, you know, with this case of probably gold pieces. I don't know. I never had a look at it.
Mm.
And I'm quite sure, knowing Korst, was it Korst? Yes, Korst, that if he had a case of gold there, he also had cases of gold elsewhere hidden, you know, or pieces of gold hidden so the Chinese wouldn't find them, or hoping that the Chinese would never find them. But he was able to carry out a marketing, do you see, with the general, and they came to some arrangement. I wasn't present, you know, because it was entirely between Kurong and Korst as to what happened to the financing part. But I know that Kurong and Korst came, you know, were satisfied, and the rest of the road that the 2nd Battalion carried on towards eastern China was free of embarrassment for the most part.
What did you? So how long did you stay at this town, on the outskirts of this town?
Oh, I would have thought, you know, just a matter of 24 hours at the most.
And then you carried on marching?
And then we carried on marching. And then at a certain village, somehow, when we got there, same thing happened, except that, you know, they stayed outside the village, and there were representatives from the, it was a town, it was a town, and then representatives from the town came out, and Wu was still with us, and the whole of the victualling of the troops was considered and taken care of, and we were in a bit of a jungle then, the encampment, or in a big wood at least, and there was a space there, and Alessandri was there, General Alessandri, and Guillaume was there, and Kurong was there, and a couple of other officers. So I went up to Kurong and I said, I've come to the end of my stay in the Legion. This is the 12th of May when I...
You've done your 5 years.
So that's an indication. It was 12th of May.
Right.
And we were at Samoa, and we'd crossed the frontier on the 30th.
Mm.
So 12 days we were marching to Samoa. Yeah.
Mm.
And I said, I'm going to join the British forces. See? So they said, no, you can't. So you're a member of this detachment and all the rest of it. And I said, no. And I said, called upon General Alessandri, because he was the general, probably, that sent out the last regimental order saying that any legionnaire coming to the end of his service in the Far East would not have to return to France to get his liberation. He could be liberated in the Far East, provided that the consul or the embassy of his country, the representative of his country, of his native country, didn't see any anything against it, you see. And so I said, that was the last regimental. And so Alessandri said, you're quite right, Murray, do you see. And the other officers, although they were absolutely against me leaving, they didn't want me to leave. And Couron said, you know, you've got officers training camp coming, and you know why. Why go away? And so I said, well, because I can see that the Legion will not be participating in any offensive for quite a long time to come. Not in this shape and all the rest of it. And you've got to march to China and then catch the train back to Laokai and Haiphong. It's going to be a long time, years rather than months, before you get back into Indochina, which I knew was, you know, their raison d'être. And I said, in the meantime, I'm going to the nearest British troops. I knew for a fact that just a short distance away there was an American weather base,
an airfield
with a
Had
weather
you seen
base.
Any Europeans?
No, so none at all. None at all.
And what was the countryside like? I mean, was it typically, when I say all this architecture was typically Chinese? I knew.
Oh yes, in Zemao one could see, you know, because it was quite an open town, and you could see that. You know, it was really a Chinese overgrown village, if you like. There were roofs to the houses. There were certain buildings that seemed to be a little bit more substantial than local cabins, if you like. But there was a main street there with the shops and the Chinese shops and Chinese cookhouse and all the rest of it.
Right. Can I just go over a couple of points? What had happened to the resistance, the other people that had been with you in the resistance?
Oh, that was all forgotten.
All right, it's all
really. I mean, it's just been integrated. We're not doing any special jobs at all, except Dalzotto and me. Yeah. We blew up a bridge, and that was right at the outset.
You blew up a bridge during the retreat?
Yes.
Right.
After the first or second day.
Right. And one thing would be that, I mean, you're entirely in the French system. You must have been thinking and speaking French continuously for how long? For years and years on end?
Yes, for 8 years.
For 8 years? Okay, yes.
37 to 45.
Yes, okay. What do you think the Japanese treatment was of the Chinese in Indochina, the expatriate Chinese, if you know anything about it? That's something I hadn't thought of.
Well, they probably looked for them, but I've got absolutely no knowledge of that at all.
And regarding, I mean, you must have been thinking as a Frenchman, really.
Undoubtedly, yes. Perhaps,
except
morally, perhaps.
Ah, explain that one.
You know, in certain circumstances, for instance, a Frenchman would have taken certain steps, and I, you know, took different steps to what the Frenchman would take. And my attitude to the natives, for instance, I was much more gentle with them than the Frenchmen were. The Frenchmen, these are Nyakwes, these are peasants, these are, you know, of no concern at all. They're the workers, they work for me, they work for us. And that's how 99% of the Frenchmen were. But me, I treated them correctly, you know, as far as I was concerned.
Did the French think you were, stupid or weak because of that?
Oh, no. By that time, the French knew me, do you see?
I see.
And they knew that, you know, I would take care of myself, and if anybody felt offended, they would explain the situation to me, and I might be with them or against them. And if I were against them, I'd tell them so. But you know, I might argue a little bit, but there wouldn't be much ruction, really.
Okay.
I mean, they knew I could take care of myself, and then we were all legionnaires, and mm. And we treated the peasants. I know I treated the peasants better than the normal run of Legionnaires, who were not particularly French, if you remember.
No. There could be all sorts of, What are the languages? Were you able to speak Vietnamese?
I spoke quite a lot of Vietnamese. I also spoke it in Washington just a couple of years ago. And that shook the head waitress at this was at Fort Myers, where a Secret Service friend of mine, whom I'd known for many years, who used to be with Eisenhower and was actually with seven other presidents of the United States, and we're always invited to Washington, and when we did go there eventually, they were lovely. We stayed a week with them, and they couldn't do enough for us, really. And so on Wednesday night, he was also in Vietnam. He was an officer. And officers on Wednesday night in Washington can dine at Fort Myers. It's one of those things, you see. And so they go into the
office. Fort Myers is what it's...
is the officer's mess in Washington.
Okay.
And so, on a Wednesday night we went there, and there was an orchestra there too, a four-piece orchestra, and I had fun with them. And then I saw them in the newspapers. Oh, my wife was with me, and his wife was with him. Afterwards, you see, they are... they always go with a certain group to any Olympic Games that are held anywhere in the world. And,
oh, really?
And they are taken by this group to play for them. You know,
I see. Yes.
And so they were there at Fort Myers that evening.
And you said you're speaking Vietnamese.
No, the head waitress turned up to our table to ask if we wanted anything to drink and what we were going to eat and all that sort of thing. Really a posh place, you see, a lovely place, the officer's mess there. And so I looked at her and I said, Biet Nho Yanam. And she looked at me and she nearly dropped everything that she had there. Because, as she told us afterwards, do you see, that was the first time that any white person, if you like, European-type person had spoken to her in Indo-Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so we carried on quite a good conversation for quite a while. And my wife is sitting there, do you see, she said, I always said that I could speak the language, but it was running out of practice.
Yes.
But it came back there, And so we had a wonderful, wonderful time. And so I did speak quite a lot of Indo-Chinese, and I had several phrases in Chinese. The Indo-Chinese, words I still use. They just come up automatically if I'm thinking of Indo-China and the Indo-Chinese people.
Yes.
Like my concubine is Kongai, do you see?
Yes.
And Dive Kekwan is, take your trousers off. Things like that. But Mat Hai Ba, that's counting 1, 2, 3,
okay.
And Lin
Did
Dai.
You speak in? Did you speak in to the girl? Did you speak in French or in Vietnamese?
Which girl?
The concubine.
Oh, in French.
In French. I see.
But she was teaching me Indo-Chinese, and
right.
I was teaching her how to write.
Right.
As a matter of fact.
Yes.
You see, and so it naturally came. I wasn't teaching her to write in English or in French. I was teaching her to write the alphabet and sounds, you see. And so Cao Ban, she didn't know how to write Cao Ban. And so, of course, it was a C-A-O. And so I taught her how to write the C.
Did you learn pick up much Arabic?
Arabic in North Africa, yes, there were quite a lot of, but mainly not the, not to carry on a commercial conversation or a polite diplomatic conversation, but to carry out an argumentative or an ordering about sort of character that the Arabic I had, you see, Maulim. Oh no, I'm sorry, that's Indo-Chinese. And Fisa, get away, go away, and
so
things like
rough
that.
And ready.
Rough and ready.
Rough
yes.
And ready. Were you, because you were as a sergeant? I knew you were. The fate of your part of the entire column was, left to you.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Weren't any of the officers and the more senior NCOs jealous or narked or peed off about status, which already,
absolutely not. This is an ancient legion tradition that the sergeants are the most important persons in the whole of the French Foreign Legion, and they're responsible for everything that happens in the Legion.
But you were responsible
but not on the tactical side.
Ah, okay. You see. What about what about adjutant-chef and this sort of thing?
Oh, they're senior NCOs.
Yes, but I would have thought of your sort of slightly prestigious position there. You would have.
Well, you see, you don't get a lot of adjutants and adjutant chefs, except in the barracks. You see, and but out on the road, Corst was an adjutant chef, and I can't remember any others.
All right.
As a matter of fact, Plash. Yes.
They didn't resent your position.
No, not at all. But the sergeant, of course, would be very respectful towards them. There's no doubt about that. He'd be respectful to everybody. And the lieutenants and the captains and all that sort of thing.